Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Terry and Robin's Power Hour, a show where we create our own reality. Thanks for joining us. So pull up a chair and enjoy the adventure. And now, here's Terry and Robin. This is Reverend Terry Power, and you are listening to the Power Hours, or the Powers Hours, I guess, with Terry and Robin. That's right, I am joined by my lady, my love, my partner, my bestest friend, one of my favoriteest people in the whole world, my wife, Robin. How you doing?
I am doing very well this evening, my love. How are you?
Doing pretty well. Got relatively few complaints. So,
good.
Well, life is mostly good. Now, of course, mm-hmm. You know, tonight I'm coming to you live from beautiful, rainy, and windy Newport, Rhode Island. So.
Oh, yeah.
The weather
and windy
over
here at home, too, so.
The weather here has been dreadful all day.
Yeah.
So. But anyway. It's, you know, it is what it is, and, you know, out paying the bills and doing my day job, so.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so in spite of the cold and rain today, we're still going to talk about planting a garden tonight. And,
yep.
You know, last week we talked about it being springtime and time to, get out and go to events, but it's also time to get out in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this past weekend I did the first mow on the yard, and we started tending to the garden a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, it's time to think about gardening and, you know, whether we're gardening for food, or we're gardening for magic, or we're gardening for fun, or just gardening for all of it, or any of it. It doesn't necessarily have to be one or the other, frankly.
Right.
You know, a lot of herbs that we associate with good food and cooking and that sort of thing also are used for some magical purposes. So. No need to draw any lines. So what are some of your first thoughts when it comes to, gardening in general, I guess?
Well, the more and more we can grow at home, I think the better, not only because it saves money, but because we know what's been put on it. I encourage people to grow heirloom non-GMO seeds in their garden. but that doesn't always mean you can protect from cross-pollination. But still, you can, try and
yeah, we do the best
still
we
better
can.
Than Exactly. And, you know, because people have been saying to me recently, well, it doesn't matter if I buy the GMO-free seeds because it's going to cross-pollinate anyway. And, well, you know,
not
yes, you may have a point. Well, yeah, but you don't know that they will either. It's going to depend on where you are in relation to some farm that grows something that you're growing. And not all things are genetically modified. Certainly corn and soybean are the two big ones that are genetically modified in this country, United States. But not everything's, you know, genetically modified. So you have a, you know, pretty good shot of growing something that won't become contaminated.
Yeah,
if you start with an heirloom seed.
If you grow corn or soybeans,
mm-hmm,
in an area where there's commercial corn and soybean,
mm-hmm,
well, yeah, you've probably got some chance that there's going to be some cross-pollination.
Right.
But if those aren't the crops you're growing, or if they don't have commercial corn or soybean growing in your region, then you're probably still safe. So, you know, a little bit of research or a little looking around is not a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
I know that we had some tomatoes that came back by themselves for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Just from the dropped fruit that reseeded the garden.
We'll
now, this year it doesn't look
yep.
like, yeah, it doesn't look like as much this year, but I don't think we tended to it in the winter as well this year as we did last year.
Yeah, last year we covered the garden. This year we didn't get around to it.
Yeah, this year not so much. So, you know, I'm sure we lost some of it to the deep freezes and 30 inches of snow and all the nonsense. This was a pretty brutal winter as well. You know, last winter was relatively mild. This winter, not so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, those are just, you know, some of the early thoughts of, the worries about cross-pollination. But what do you want to plant? You know, both Robin and I are talking a lot about getting closer to our food. And, you know, this show tonight kind of addresses both of those issues. You know, Robin is very much about eat fresh and all the health benefits of taking it out of the garden and putting it on your plate. And I'm very much about the spiritual aspects of digging in the dirt and connecting with nature and the cycle of the year, and how that reconnects us with the cycles of the earth and our understanding of the divine. And here we go with a project that can easily be both.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful thing.
One of the things people often say to me is, well, you know, I don't have a big yard, or I have only a balcony, or I don't have a whole lot of room to grow anything. I just have a little patio area. You can do a lot in containers. You can certainly do cucumbers and tomatoes, and, you know, especially like cherry tomatoes grow really wonderfully in pots. You can grow even lettuce in like a large pot. So there are all sorts of ways. Carrots you can grow in pots as long as they're deep enough. So there's all kinds of things you can grow in that you can grow in pots. So you just have to be a little bit creative. One of my neighbors went out and found a couple of old bathtubs that had been discarded and put that out on her deck and painted the sides to make them look kind of pretty with some enamel paint, and filled them, one with garlic and chive and another one with lettuce and tomatoes. So that was like her little garden, because she knew she always used garlic and chives and tomatoes and lettuce.
No, absolutely. And You know, and another thing that comes to my mind is there's nothing that says that you can't grow herbs in a window box.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to have something, culinary herbs often have magical purposes. And also, you know, kitchen witchery is a long-established practice. And the flavors that we put into our food and the love that we put into our food all becomes magical in and of itself. So
right.
A simple window box with a few herbs that you tend to regularly and connect with can be an excellent start. Because one of the things I was going to talk about was understanding your own limits. And that's one of the things that Robin and I have been talking about is with our work schedules, the garden we've got is just enough. Anything more would end up being neglected because we don't have the time or energy to put into constant tending of an acre of garden.
Right.
Our little patch, about 4 by 8 feet, roughly,
mm-hmm.
Marked off with some boards and filled in with some topsoil and turning that into the regular soil, is just the right amount for us. You may not need that much or want that much or have the energy for that much. You may want more. You may want a sculpted garden. You may want to do, I mean, there's all kinds of things that we dream of doing and we talk about doing and plan to do, but right now, in the current circumstances, we know our limits.
Mm-hmm.
It is better to start small and tend it well than to go too big and neglect it.
Yeah, and
because
waste food.
Then what are you, waste food, and then what are you saying to your God that I don't care about this mm-hmm. garden? I started this and can't finish it. So, you know, stay within your boundaries. Like I said, start small and then grow next year. If you've
mm-hmm.
got more time, then build a little more next year. So
mm-hmm.
it all is a matter of know yourself. Oh, where have we heard that before?
Yeah.
A little self-awareness. Who'd have thought? But so those are just some of the thoughts that I have. What else have you got?
Well, you know, when people sit down and decide what they're going to plant, one of the things you have to think about is what am I going to use most? What is it going to be? What's going to be the most convenient for me to have in the garden? If I'm going to grow something, how much of it should I grow? And
mm-hmm.
my thought process is grow what you like and what you will use all the time. And something you know that if you have a surplus, you can give to other people and they will actually appreciate it. You know, don't grow eggplant if you're the only person in your household who likes eggplant. Because you can buy one eggplant every once in a while to satisfy that part of your need. But if everybody likes lettuce, if everybody likes tomatoes, if everybody likes onions, garlic, cucumbers, these are all pretty simple things to grow. And you really don't need a lot of space to grow them successfully.
Mm-hmm.
And start small and start with things that you have some familiarity with. You know, don't go off the deep end and decide you're going to, you know, grow avocados if you have no concept of how an avocado even grows. I recently explained to somebody that avocados grow on trees, and she was just blown away. She was like, they do? I don't know what she thought. But she's like, well, I didn't know they grew on trees. I'm like, yeah. What'd you think grew on? They're like a fruit, you know? Fruit.
Well, you'll have to tell me that story in private. I look forward to it. Yeah, now, you know, we grow a lot of tomatoes. This has already been mentioned. And we will consume every tomato we can pull out of that garden and still want for more. And that's good because we're not wasting. But at the same time, if we did have a bumper crop one year, we're certainly not above canning and then using the canned tomatoes to make spaghetti sauce all winter.
Right. Yep.
Because we use a lot of canned tomatoes as it is. And so, you know, we would just as easily put it in, you know, put it in jars and save it back. So that's another option if you do produce a lot of something. Make sure it's something that you can and will preserve and use.
Right.
Tomatoes is a good option because you can, they're easily canned. It is one of the easiest fruit to save throughout the year. If you,
you
do grow fruit, go ahead.
I was going to say, you can even with cherry tomatoes, put them, you know, in baggies, like double freezer bags, and you can freeze them. There's nothing easier than just throwing them in the baggie and freezing them. Now, you can't cut them like you would for a sandwich, but you can use them in cooking. You can make sauce with them. You can, you know, have a pasta dish. You just want a couple of tomatoes, little hint of tomatoes in. You can throw them in there, and they will kind of dissolve if you want to make a sauce, a quick sauce in a pan. Throw a couple of the little tomatoes in, and again, they will dissolve. If you freeze them and then you blanch them in a little warm water first, you can peel the skin off of them, then throw them in the pan, whatever you want to do. You'll find that, that they're very versatile that way.
Yeah, tomatoes is one of the great, you know, one of the great garden fruit that you can just use in a thousand different ways. And speaking of fruit, if you're like into strawberries, or something like that, that's another thing that's very easily frozen, and you can pull out frozen strawberries and use those throughout the year as well. So
yeah, the only problem with growing strawberries is it's really, in my experience, very difficult to keep the wildlife out of your strawberries. You're going to have bunnies and bears and deer, and you know you have to have the right spot for growing strawberries. And the other thing you have to be mindful of is the position of your garden in relation to the sun. So if you have a garden that gets a lot of sun, you could maybe have a garden that gets too much sun. Maybe there are things you shouldn't grow, like, you know, certain breeds of tomatoes, for example, don't like too much sun. The vines will, you know, wither, the branches will burn, the leaves will burn up, and they won't do well. It's a delicate balance. You have to have enough sun and enough water and enough shade to make it all kind of work together. But you have to know what you're planting.
Yeah, and you can also plant shade-producing plants like sunflower on the afternoon side, on the western side. That grows up and creates shade for the less sun-tolerant members of your shared garden. So planting stuff
like
together.
Things like zinnias that have big broad leaves.
Exactly. Anything that can create shade for the less sun-tolerant can all be planted in, you know, in the same garden. And use the garden itself to protect different plants. And after the break, because we are, you know, we're about 20 minutes into the show, but after the break, I want to try to remember to get back and talk about some of the pairings, things that complement one another. And come back to that. But you mentioned something that I wanted that I wanted to bring up, and that is borders. You mentioned, you know, wildlife and strawberries, wildlife and your garden.
Yep.
And borders. Now, if you're into the permaculture thing, you may not want to have hard fixed boundaries, and you want to let it kind of be more natural, but at the same time, some plants that you might want to plant may not do well competing with grass or other wild growing plants. So some form of boundary, whether it's a row of stones, in our case, just a line of wood, just some boards, you know, landscape timbers or old railroad ties, whatever you can get your hands on, has served us well. We haven't had a great deal of wildlife intrusion, but we've not had a whole lot of particularly tasty treats for the wildlife either. You may at some point decide you need more of a boundary to keep deer and rabbits and whatever out of your garden. You know, some natural boundaries might include a stone wall. I've seen some really interesting boundaries made with just picked up sticks driven into the ground and some kind of vine. You know, like a grapevine or whatever vines grow in the woods in your area, and just weave that in and out to make a boundary around your garden. It's natural, it's attractive, and it provides that here's the garden, there's everything else, kind of separation that you know, segregates it in a way that keeps out the grass or whatever it is you're trying to keep out, and also makes that your garden. You know, it's hard to explain it other than that. You know, to create a set aside garden space.
Well, there's actually a trend nowadays amongst the permaculturists that they feel that you should allow different vegetables to grow next to each other because they have a symbiotic relationship of sorts. One plant, let's say, will take one particular nutrient out of the soil but put another one back in, and a different plant may need that same nutrient that the other plant puts into the soil, and, you know, you can find plants that will do that for each other. That's really how plants in the wild tend to choose where they're going to thrive and how they're going to grow. There actually is not just willy-nilly. You know, Mother Nature rarely wastes energy, right? So it just will happen. Oh, you know, this plant takes phosphorus out of the soil and this other plant puts it back in. And the other plant that's also growing here, you know, takes some other mineral out of the soil, but this other plant over here puts it back in, and they all live in concert with one another, feeding each other in a truly symbiotic, you know, get along within the neighborhood kind of relationship. And they talk about how when you do this and you let plants grow next to each other that feed each other, that it's much more low maintenance. There's a lot less weeding that goes on, and that you'll get a bigger yield from these plants because they're growing in their natural habitat. You know, if you think about it, you don't ever in nature see rows, you know, planted rows of, you know, the same plant over and over and over again the way we farm. That's not the way nature does it. It might grow grapes in the forest, and they'll have some grapes over here and a little more grapes over there. And in between it will have other things. And those grapes will grow on a specific type of tree versus another, because that tree gives them nutrients that the grapes will need out of the ground with the root at the base of that tree. So this is just one of those things that nature just has organized for itself, and we really should, instead of impressing upon nature what we think it ought to be, you know, planting in cute little rows, perhaps do a little research and find out what plants like to grow next to each other and scatter their seeds together and see what happens.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was something that I was going to come back to, but yeah, if you want to go ahead and jump into it now, it seems like we keep coming back to it. You know, there are a lot of garden partners, kind of, you know, if you will, plants that grow well together, plants that maybe restrict or the word is escaping me, but repel insects that might eat another plant, but the planting a particular flower in the garden will the vegetable from insects. Are you familiar with this concept?
Yeah, marigolds are wonderful.
Marigolds.
Or calendula, which is like a different species of marigold, bigger. They will repel ants and certain other bugs from out of the garden. And, yeah, there are definitely things that you can grow to keep the ants out. That's the other one. Foxglove, I believe, also ants do not care for. And other...
And that tends to grow a lot with tomatoes all by itself.
Well, yeah. Well, I think foxglove is, I don't think it's a nightshade. One interesting thing that we've noted here is every single time I plant tomatoes, the next year belladonna will come up. And I'm not quite sure what that's about. I know they're both nightshades, but if you plant tomatoes and you've had tomatoes, I don't know why all of a sudden you'd start growing belladonna. I mean, I had enough belladonna last year in with our baby cherry tomatoes. I could have poisoned an entire neighborhood. So I'm not quite sure what that is, but we spent a lot of time pulling out these huge belladonna plants from amongst the tomato plants.
Absolutely.
And this was when they reseeded them. And this was when they reseeded themselves. The year before, there had been no belladonna. So I'm not sure how that happens, how the seeds morph like that. Just interesting.
Yeah, and here's another thing. I was just looking at something on the Internet while we were talking. And borage is... said to protect tomatoes from hornworms.
Oh, cool.
And we've already mentioned marigolds, you know, well known for repelling garden pests.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do a little bit of research like that. Say, say you're growing green beans. You know, what tends to grow with it? You know, good companions.
Mm-hmm.
Look at companion planting. Particularly when we were talking about permaculture, this kind of companion planting is stuff that, enhances that shares and supports each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I just found one companion table on a site called deepgreenpermaculture.com. And in fact, I'm going to put that in the chat room right now because that's just a really, really cool website that shows, how you can plant companions, and it talks about what's a good companion, what's a bad companion for just about everything from apples, apricots, beetroot, different types of beans, what you can grow with it, what you couldn't, what you shouldn't grow with it. You know, everything from cucumbers to fennel, you get the idea. So then we've got to look at soil. What's your soil like? What is your moisture level like? And we're at the bottom of the hour, so let's go ahead and take a break. And we'll come back because I was thinking about, you know, particularly wet soils or particularly sandy soils, that sort of thing, and some experience I've had with planting in different parts of the world and how that affects the plants you can grow. Let's go ahead and listen to a song real quick and take our commercial break. Now, Thursday night, I'm going to be talking with Rowena of the Glen, who was present at Caldera Fest, but will be appearing and actually singing this year. We met her last year and enjoyed the conversation. Looking forward to talking with her again and to hearing her and seeing her perform in October at Caldera Fest. She's got a couple of songs that we have been given to play, and one of them sounded particularly interesting to me, and it is called My Mother's Song, and I'm trying to find it in the deck right now, and I'm struggling. Let me... one of those days.
It happens.
Okay, here we go. Yeah. Here is a song called My Mother's Song by Rowena of the Glen, who will be our guest on Thursday night. I hope you enjoy it. Stick around, and we'll be back here in just a few minutes.
My mother's song is like
And now a message from our friends over at International Pagan Radio.
Tune in to International Pagan Radio. You can hear your favorite artists such as Dave the Bard, Tuatha Dea, Spiral Rhythm, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, and many, many more. Join us for exciting shows like Ask a Witch and Storytime with Rook as well. www.internationalpaganradio.com on the net or on TuneIn Radio on your mobile devices. Join us on Facebook and Twitter too. International Pagan Radio, all pagan, all the time.
Listening to Terry and Robin on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. We're glad you're here. And now, back to the show.
And welcome back, everybody. This is Reverend Terry Power, and you are listening to The Power Hours with Terry and Robin. How you doing over there, darling?
I'm doing well.
All right. So before the break, we had started talking. Well, I mean, tonight we've been talking about basically gardening. And gardening for good health, gardening for, the spirituality of getting into the garden. But we were talking about plant companions. And now we were promising to get a little bit into magic, but just before the break, I mentioned about soil types and some of my experiences. And a lot of our listeners know that I've lived in a lot of places. Particularly interesting is I lived in Barbados for 4 years, and the soil down there is, of course, going to be radically different than the soil in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And I have spent a lot of time growing culinary herbs in different regions of the country and, of course, in Barbados. And one of the things I've noticed is that most of the traditional culinary herbs that you think of as being like Italian-type herbs love sandy, well-draining soil. That just is what it is. One of my best crops in Barbados was basil, and I had 2 half barrels cut a barrel cut lengthwise, and just two half round laid flat and propped up on some blocks, and grew mint and basil, some peppers that grew pretty well. But the basil, my gosh, I was giving away basil all the time because it was just constant. And down there, it just grows year-round. You know, there is no season in Barbados. The basil just kept growing. And I was giving it to cooks that, you know, were cooking in some of the condos. You'd go down there and stay in one of the high-dollar condos. You'd get your own cook and stuff like that. And some of those cooks were using my basil in their cooking because I was trying to figure out what to do with it all. In Tennessee, I had pretty good luck with with other culinary herbs. But the idea is that different types of herbs like different areas, love different types of soil. Mint, in particular, if you're growing any kind of mint, it's going to like a lot of moisture. And you'll see a lot of times around a standpipe or outdoor water faucet, you'll see mint, particularly sweet mint, just growing wild right up against the water faucet. So, Robin, what were some other thoughts that you had about where to grow or types of soil and that sort of thing?
Well, one of the things that's a little bit controversial in relationship to magical herbs and the choosing of herbs, especially if you're wildcrafting or you are in an area that you're not familiar with what grows there, is something called the doctrine of signatures, which basically says that if you are looking for a plant that grows in a specific place, like a wet soil near a river, let's say watercress, but you can't find watercress because you're not in an area where it's naturally a place that it grows, maybe the climate's not right, but if you go down to the river, you will find something similar enough to watercress that will do and have very similar properties because they grow in the same place in the same way. Some people, you know, give this theory credence and others don't. I actually think, you know what, when you're out in the world and in the wild and you don't have a pocket guide, it's good to have at least some sort of notion of what to do. So it's good to be aware of the doctrine of signatures. The other thing that it talks about is that plants that look alike. So, for example, if you're looking for a plant that has, you know, three leaves and the way it grows on a stem, it's got separate stems, and off each stem, you know, are several leaf pods, and each one of those leaf pods has three leaves, and you find another plant that looks similar to that, it also should have similar properties.
Magical,
honestly,
or culinary, or what?
Everything.
You say similar property.
I mean,
okay.
Yeah, everything. I mean, if you're looking for, you know, a plant that's going to be a replacement, let's say you're going to use basil for a money-attracting spell, and you can't find basil, and yet you know the kind of area where basil would grow, let's say around a standpipe, and you go there and you see a plant, and that plant is structured very much like basil, but you smell it and it's not basil, but it's still growing around that standpipe, then yes, you could probably use that as a replacement for basil. Its properties, both magical and, you know, would be the same, but obviously anytime you're going to test something before you're going to eat it, if you don't know what it is and you can't identify it, there are ways of doing that. You can get guidebooks. There's the rub test, and there are all kinds of other tests, like you put some of the leaves in the palm of your hand and you mush your hands together and roll a leaf and you know, get some of the oil on the palm of your hand, and you give it a few minutes and you see if it becomes irritated or not. Then you can, you know, maybe put the little tip of your finger in the oil and put it on the tip of your tongue and see how it tastes. See if it's bitter. See if it's just so astringent you wouldn't want to eat it. These are probably things, you know, that you should not try to eat then. Think about herbs. When you take a bite of most herbs, it's pleasant. It's not, you know, when you put it in your mouth. This is how we wound up eating this stuff. Somebody at some point back in history had to be one of the first people to say, this doesn't taste bad. Let's take a chance and eat it. And
yeah, I wonder
so,
what that
I mean, that's,
tastes like.
Yeah. So, I mean, and this is, you know, this is how we arrived with the culinary herbs we have. It's stuff that people tried and said, hey, you know what? This tastes pretty good. Let's try putting it in with our food.
And then they didn't die.
Right. And the origins of many, many culinary herbs come from people doing healing with food. Herbs and, you know, vegetables and fruit, these were our first medicines. You know, it wasn't always that you could go to the pharmacy and fill your prescription for your medicine. People had to find things in nature that would help them survive. And they did a pretty good job. Obviously, we managed to survive, you know, a long time without modern medicine, as it were.
Oh, absolutely. Well, a lot of these herbs that we talk about for you know, culinary, you know, for food, also have reputed you know, magical purposes. And, you know, some people subscribe to those more fully than others. But, you know, rosemary, for an example, it's great in your cooking, but it's also associated with healing, love, purification. Lavender, of course, my gosh, that's got, you know, 101 uses, and many of them kind of correspond healing as well as, you know, spells involving love and happiness and beauty, relaxation, psychic knowledge. You know, all of those kind of go along with the health purposes of lavender. So there's any number of plants that we cook with or use in our daily life that fall into that category.
And, you know, some of these herbs, I mean, lavender is one of those herbs that I cook with. It's in any good mixture that they call herbs de Provence should have lavender in it. It's usually lavender and rosemary and some other herbs. But lavender should be a component of any good herbs de Provence. And it's not something we use a lot in this country is lavender, but in other countries, particularly France and some of the other countries in Europe, Belgium, they put lavender in lots of things. They have lavender butter. They have lavender tea. They have lavender chicken dishes. They also use, some other cultures use more flowers, period, in their cooking. There's marigold chicken and rose petal chicken. South American, Mexican cooking uses a lot of roses in their cooking, and you know it's again it's something that we haven't done a lot in this country. Nasturtium is also edible, so there are also flowers that are edible and also have magical purposes and healing purposes. If you think about box flower remedies. They come from flowers, obviously, so why not eat flowers to attain the same sort of healing?
Well, you can grow chamomile easily enough, you know, and that's a great one for, I mean, you're particularly fond of chamomile tea.
I use chamomile tea for so many things, everything from, you know, if you've got a baby that's cutting a tooth, or you've got a baby with an upset tummy, gas, all the way up to if you've got a toothache or if you can't sleep at night or if you've got, you know, a little stress-related colitis, got a bad headache. I mean, there are so many medicinal uses for chamomile. Also, you know, chamomile is a wonderful magical herb. It's an herb associated often with mystical women and intuition, and yeah, I just it's one of my all-time faves, and it's very pretty in the garden because it gets those pretty little happy daisies, which I like.
Yeah, absolutely. And
you can dry it
yourself
at home and make tea.
Yeah. You know, you've mentioned lavender, mint. Mint, a variety of types of mint. You know, what you generally find growing wild is something that's typically called sweet mint, which is very similar to spearmint. Although spearmint is a decidedly different flavor, and peppermint is different even than that. Peppermint tea, that's another one that you like, is a peppermint tea for stomach aches. And, you know, some people just like the flavor of peppermint. It can be used for purification. I like spearmint, and it has some of the same properties. And, you know, that's just some of those things that you have that, you know, you can grow easily in a garden. In fact, spearmint and peppermint are things that you kind of have to be conscious of because they will grow up, fall over, and take root. So they'll spread all over the place. But even some of the foods we eat, you know, lettuce has got, you know, magical purposes with divination and protection. So there's a lot of these herbs that we think of, or a lot of, you know, growing plants that we think of only for food, and we don't realize that our ancestors were using them for a variety of purposes. You know, honeysuckle. You know, I grew up loving the smell of honeysuckle. But that is one of those things that, you know, of course, you wouldn't put that in your garden, but you would like to have it growing near your house. And, you know, protection, psychism, love kind of spells, all of that gets tied up with the with honeysuckle. So do a little research. Be looking at what you can grow in your area. Garlic, God, we cook with a lot of garlic, and you know, it's, you know, healing properties, magical properties. We just love the taste of garlic. We barely can cook without it. So, you know, think about some of the things you like to eat, some of the things that you would want to have in a garden that grows in your area. And plan your garden for all of this. Don't stick to, well, I just want to grow food. Well, some of these foods like garlic, lettuce, we've already talked about magical purposes. Mint that you can use in your cooking has magical purposes. Basil that we've mentioned, rosemary, thyme, lavender. All of this is stuff that grows in a lot of different areas that can be used for food, for seasoning, for magic, for medicine, all of this. And just a few items like that could make a very nice garden that provides for all of your different purposes. Robin?
Yeah, that's true. And again, that goes back to the beginning of the show where, you know, choose what you're going to plant in your garden, things that you can use for many different purposes. I can cook with it. I can heal with it. I can do magic with it. And you'll find that rather than going out and buying stuff, you can just go out to the garden and clip a few snips of something. And it'll be more powerful in because it's more related to you and your spell, and you've put your energy into raising that plant and keeping it alive and nurturing it. So it's going to be connected to you, and there's a different feel when you're doing magic with something that you've you know, basically grown and raised and brought in, basically, than if you go into the store and buy something. There's way less of a connection. So, again, this is about being connected to our roots and literally our roots, the roots in the earth. And that's where magic comes from. And that deep connection to our planet and the energies of nature. So the more we can do to instill that into our spell work, the better.
Okay, we do have a quick question in the in the chat room.
Okay.
Yeah, from a guest. Yeah, I was drawing a complete blank. I don't know what was going on. We've got a guest in there who is asking about our thoughts on moon gardening, and you know, gardening with the moon phases, and you know, the Farmer's Almanac and our ancestors were certainly into the phases of the moon, what sign the moon was in, and all of that going into planting. And the farmers still use that. So I'm absolutely a fan of getting a farmer's almanac and including their planting guides Try to get one for your particular area. Some almanacs, yeah, because some almanacs will have regional versions or regional editions that will help you to select the best growing times, planting times, harvesting times for different plants and different types of plants in your region. And a lot of that is going to be based on not just the solar calendar, but very much on the moon cycles and signs. You know, I mean, actual astrology, not just astronomy, but, you know, astrological influences. So I absolutely think that's a great idea.
Okay. Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
But I don't want people to keep that from. I don't want people to feel like, oh gosh, it's not the right moon phase. I shouldn't plant my cucumbers till next week. I think it's more important to go with, you know, when you have the time and when the weather is right, and you know, sooner is better than later if you can make it all work.
Well, certainly. I mean, we talk about using astrological influences and such in spells and magic all the time. And while, yes, if you have the time and the energy to look at the moon phase and the astrological signs and the planetary hours and any of the day of the week and any of that stuff, if you have the ability to do that and plan that much, then by all means, cool. You're probably going to, enjoy, and the energy you put into it will be rewarded. On the other hand, if you need a healing spell or you need to plant something, you don't wait for the planetary influences. You do what you need to do when you need to do it. So, the same thing would go with gardening. You know, absolutely, you know, what Robin was saying, you do what you can do when you need to do it. And if you can incorporate that other stuff, sure, you will gain from it and be rewarded, but it's not something that you should, not do something because, you know, the signs aren't right. Never let that prevent you from doing something. That's kind of my thinking on it. Robin?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Yeah, I was just making sure I was saying the same thing you were. All right. So we are hurtling toward the top of the hour. So let's do the... how to get in touch with us and where we're going to be coming up kind of stuff, and then we'll come back for final thoughts.
Okay.
All right.
Yep.
So how does somebody get in touch with us?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were going to do it for a change. Okay. Well, if somebody would like to get in touch with either Terry or myself, you can reach us at littlestonebridge@gmail.com. You can also reach us at our Facebook pages, and we have a Little Stone Bridge Pathworkings Facebook page. We also have our individual personal pages. Mine is Robin A. McKean, and then there's Terry's page, which is Rev, as in R-E-V, Reverend Rev, Terry Power HP. That's it?
Absolutely. And check out the Spiritual Unity Radio Network Facebook page.
Yeah, that one too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea. But, yeah, certainly if you want us to appear at any of your events, or if you've got workshops that you would like for us to come and participate, or if you've got an event coming up you would like us to promote or mention on our Thursday night shows, please, by all means, let us know. The email address that Robin gave, littlestonebridge@gmail.com. Now, with all of that said, we are already planning to attend, and we're working with the organizing group for an event in June that we're very excited about. And, of course, we will be appearing at Caldera Fest and working with the organizer there and doing some promotional stuff. So you will have a chance to meet us at Caldera Fest. Come see us there. And also in Central New Jersey at Ishtar Fest. Robin?
Yeah, Ishtar Fest is in Monmouth, I believe it's Monmouth County, Central New Jersey, located sort of between Route 9 in Marlboro and Englishtown in that area. And it's going to actually be an awfully fun event. It's going to be a Ren Fair, but instead of Renaissance wear, it's going to be come dressed as a Sumerian god or goddess, or just a person who would have lived in that time, wear the garb. If you come dressed in costume at registration, you will get a free crescent roll. Get it? Fertile crescent.
Fertile crescent.
Oh,
right. Crescent.
Okay.
Return to the
anyway.
Fertile crescent. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it's going to be a really fun event. There will be a feast Saturday evening, which the food is included in the prices, a price of admission. And there will be classes and vendors and workshops galore and a kids track to keep the kids busy and safe while you're off having yourself a good time. And it's being held on this beautiful piece of private land in New Jersey. So go to handsofchange.org and look for Ishtar Sumerfest and sign up today, and we will be there. We are actually on the planning committee for this event, and we are really looking forward to seeing people there. And again, that's hands, you know, like the hands you clap with, you know, handsofchange.org. Hope to see you there.
Yeah, absolutely. Come and walk like a Sumerian.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was thinking, you were saying hands, and I was thinking the hands you dig in the soil with and plant plants.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And speaking of plants, final thoughts on gardening.
Do it. It's good for you.
I love you. All right.
I love you too. And remember to thank the earthworms. Earthworms are sacred. They without earthworms, they are our heroes. Without earthworms, we'd all be starving and probably walking around up to our eyeballs in very unpleasant stuff. So.
Yes.
Love the earthworms.
Love the earthworms. All right. Whatever you're doing, get out in the garden and get. Robin says all the time that food that you take right out of the garden and put on your table is the healthiest way to eat. And again, connecting with the plants, connecting with the earth, connecting with the divine, all goes together. So whatever it is, however big it can be, get out and get your hands dirty and get into nature.
Yep.
So with that, we will wish you all a week filled with love and with wonder. Good night, everyone, and blessed be.
Blessed be.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.